Have you ever heard of a pilot who strapped a lion cub into the cockpit and raced airplanes for a living? I'm Taildragger, and you're listening to The Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair because this one is a beauty. We're going back to the late 1920s and the 1930s, the golden age of air racing. And there is no figure in that era more colorful, more outrageous, or more genuinely talented than Colonel Roscoe Turner. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, Roscoe Turner was born in 1903 in Corinth, Mississippi. Small town, dirt roads, cotton fields. His family didn't have much, but what Roscoe had was an unshakable belief that he was destined for something big. He got his first taste of flying in the Army, though he never actually completed military flight training. Washed out, in fact. But that didn't stop him. He taught himself, barnstormed his way across the South, flew anything with wings and a prayer. And here's where you have to understand something about Roscoe. This man understood spectacle. In an era when pilots were already larger than life, Roscoe Turner turned it up to 11. He designed his own uniform. Not a military uniform, mind you, a custom-tailored powder blue outfit with polished boots, a waxed handlebar mustache, and more gold braid than a South American generalissimo. He looked like something out of a Hollywood casting call, and that was entirely the point. See, Roscoe figured out early on that speed alone wouldn't pay the bills. You needed sponsors, you needed press, you needed to be the guy that everyone was talking about when they walked through the gates at the air races. And nobody understood that game better than Roscoe Turner. But the uniform was just the appetizer. In 1930, Roscoe acquired a lion cub. A real, living, breathing African lion cub. He named the cub Gilmore, after the Gilmore Oil Company, which was his primary sponsor. Gilmore Oil already used a lion as their corporate mascot, so Roscoe, being Roscoe, decided the most natural thing in the world would be to fly with a real lion in the cockpit. Now here's where it gets interesting. This wasn't just a publicity gag on the ground, he actually flew with Gilmore. The lion had a custom harness and a parachute, yes, you heard me right. A parachute for a lion, Roscoe had it specially made, and Gilmore would sit in the front cockpit of his open biplane, ears flattened back in the wind, while Roscoe barnstormed across the country. They flew together for thousands of miles. Roscoe claimed the lion loved it. I have my doubts about that, but the press absolutely ate it up. Newspapers across America ran photographs of this immaculately dressed pilot and his lion cub climbing out of a biplane. It was the most brilliant piece of aviation marketing anyone had ever seen, but here's what people forget about Roscoe Turner. Behind all that flash, behind the uniform and the lion and the showmanship, there was a genuinely world-class racing pilot, and the place he proved it was the National Air Races at Cleveland. The Cleveland Air Races. If you've never read about them, you need to understand that they were the biggest sporting spectacle in America during the 1930s. We're talking 100,000 spectators packed into the grandstands. We're talking front page news coast to coast. The Thompson Trophy race was the main event, a closed course pylon race around a roughly 10-mile circuit, flown at speeds that would make your eyes water. Pilots flew at altitudes so low they were clipping the tops of corn stalks, banking around pylons at over 300 miles per hour in aircraft that were essentially hand-built missiles with tiny wings. The Thompson Trophy was dangerous. It killed people, and it was the most coveted prize in American aviation. Roscoe Turner won it 3 times. Let that sink in. 3 Thompson Trophies, no one else ever did that. His first win came in 1933, flying a Waddell Williams racer. These were the Formula One cars of the sky. Small, sleek monoplanes with enormous engines bolted to the front, built by a young engineer named Jimmy Waddell down in Patterson, Louisiana. The Waddell Williams racers were fast, fragile, and absolutely terrifying to fly. The cockpits were so tight that Roscoe's shoulders would rub against both sides. The visibility over that long engine cowling was almost non-existent. You flew by feel and by nerve. In that 1933 race, Roscoe averaged 241 miles per hour around the course. Think about what that means. 1933, the airlines were flying Ford Trimeters at maybe 110, and here's Roscoe Turner, pulling 5 and 6 G's around the pylons. The engine screaming, the wind tearing at his goggles, racing 50 feet off the ground at 241. He took the checkered flag and climbed out of that tiny cockpit with that famous mustache perfectly waxed. Of course it was. His second Thompson win came in 1938, and his third in 1939. For those last 2 victories, he was flying the Turner Laird, special an aircraft he helped design himself. It was a low-wing monoplane with a Pratt & Whitney twin Wasp engine putting out 1,000 horsepower. The airplane was painted a gorgeous cream and red, and it was fast, brutally fast. In the 1939 Thompson, his final victory, Roscoe averaged 282 miles per hour, and the way he flew that race became legendary. He was so precise around the pylons that the judges remarked they had never seen anyone fly a tighter course. He wasn't just fast, he was surgical. Every bank, every turn, every straightaway was calculated to shave seconds without wasting an inch of airspace. Now, the races at Cleveland weren't just about the Thompson Trophy, there was also the Bendix Trophy race, a cross-country speed dash from Burbank, California to Cleveland. Roscoe won that one too, in 1933, flying nonstop coast to coast. Think about the endurance that required. No autopilot, no GPS, just a compass, some charts, and the kind of iron bladder that long-distance racing demanded. But the Cleveland races were not kind to everyone who flew them. And this is the part of the story that Roscoe carried with him for the rest of his life. The pylon racing at Cleveland killed some of the best pilots of the era. In 1929, a Marine pilot went straight into the ground on the home stretch. The crashes were spectacular and horrible, usually happening right in front of the grandstands. Pilots died because the airplanes were pushed far beyond any reasonable engineering margin. These were experimental aircraft flown at their absolute limits by men who believed they were invincible. Roscoe was not invincible, he knew that. What set him apart was not that he was reckless. It was that he was calculated. He studied the course. He planned his fuel loads down to the last gallon. He tested his engine temperatures obsessively. He was a showman, yes, but in the cockpit, he was an engineer and a tactician. There's a wonderful story from one of the Cleveland races where a younger pilot came up to Roscoe before the start and asked him what the secret was. How do you win the Thompson Trophy? And Roscoe looked at him with those sharp eyes and said, "You fly the course, son, not the other airplanes. You fly the course." That might be the best single piece of racing advice anyone has ever given. After the 1939 season, the Cleveland Air Races were suspended because of the war. They came back briefly after World War II, but they were never quite the same. The aircraft had gotten too fast, the course is too dangerous, and the public appetite had shifted. The golden age was over. Roscoe Turner retired from racing as the winningest pilot in Thompson Trophy history. He settled in Indianapolis and founded the Roscoe Turner Aeronautical Corporation, which became a respected flight school and fixed base operation. He trained military pilots during World War II. He became an elder statesman of aviation, appearing at air shows and events, still wearing that uniform, still sporting that mustache. As for Gilmore the lion, the cat eventually got too big to fly. He grew into a full-sized African lion, which tends to change the weight and balance calculations rather dramatically. Gilmore was retired to the Indianapolis Zoo, where he lived comfortably for years. Roscoe visited him regularly. Roscoe Turner passed away in 1970 in Indianapolis. He was 67 years old. The National Aviation Hall of Fame inducted him in 1975. And what a legacy he left. 3 Thompson trophies, a Bendix trophy, thousands of hours in some of the most dangerous aircraft ever built, a lion in the cockpit, and a fundamental understanding that aviation is as much about the human story as it is about the machine. You know what I love about the Roscoe Turner story? It's that he never let anyone tell him he was too flashy, too loud, too much. In an era of buttoned-up military test pilots, Roscoe was pure American barnstormer turned racing champion. He proved that you could be a showman and a serious pilot at the same time. That excellence and personality weren't mutually exclusive. Every time I watch a modern airshow performer climb out of the cockpit and wave to the crowd, I see a little bit of Roscoe Turner. He understood something that a lot of folks in aviation still struggle with. The airplane gets them to the airport, the story is what keeps them there. I drew on Dan Pisano's research at the National Air and Space Museum and Bill Rhodes' classic book Bailing Wire, Chewing Gum and Guts for today's segment. Come find more stories like this one at radiohangar.com. Fly the course, not the other airplanes. See you next time.